Cassar Jane Show, Talk Radio for Fine Minds, airs Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, and is always available for your listening pleasure at HallieKasserJane.com. Thank you so much for being here. I am Hallie Kasser Jane. Today on the Hallie Kasser Jane Show, it's sugar and spice and everything hilarious when humorist Dave Barry joins me at my table to talk about his latest book, You Can Date Boys When You're 40, and so much more. But before we begin, a brief message from our sponsors. You are listening to The Hallie Kasser Jane Show, talk radio for fine minds. The Hallie Kasser Jane Show is always available online at HallieKasserJane.com and a host of venues, including Blog Talk Radio. But be sure to visit us at our newest home on iHeartRadio. Today, the Hallie Kasser Jane Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. With over 150,000 titles in virtually every genre, you'll find what you're looking for. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/The Hallie Kasser Jane Show.
Is someone you love living with frequent pain? Are they spending more time just sitting in a chair or lying in bed or going to the ER more often? Other than taking them to the doctor, you may not know what else to do. Treasure Coast Hospice can help in more ways than you may realize. Even if you don't think your loved one is ready for hospice care, their experts can evaluate your loved one's condition and direct you to the right resources in our community. Call Treasure Coast Hospice to learn more or visit tchospice.org.
Hello, I'm Hallie Kasser Jane, host of the Hallie Kasser Jane Show. Join me Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, when I talk with the great artist, writers, musicians, politicians, and celebrities of our day. The Hallie Kasser Jane Show is talk radio for fine minds. Tune in live or listen to the podcast at HallieKasserJane.com. Dave Barry. Does he really need an introduction? Barry is the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times best-selling author and columnist who wrote a nationally syndicated humor column for the Miami Herald from 1983 to 2005. He has also written more than 30 books, both novels and nonfiction. His most recent bestsellers include Insane City and I'll Mature When I'm Dead. Two of Dave Barry's books became the basis for the CBS sitcom Dave's World. Dave Barry is the gift that keeps on giving. Now the humorist is out with a new title, yet another gem that will keep you laughing uproariously. You Can Date Boys When You're 40, which is billed as Dave Barry on parenting and other topics he knows very little about. Oh boy, here we go. Let's talk. So 30 plus books you have produced. 30 years. That means that you are at least on this planet. I have no idea how old you are, but I'm wondering.
Oh, no, I'm way older than that. And I always have to stress that many of my books are extremely short. None of them contain any useful information at all. And some of them are actually collections of columns. So you can't really, and if you actually were to take all of my life's work, all of the writing I've ever done, it's probably like a single day's output for Stephen King.
Probably, because he is something else, isn't he? But, you know, I want to get into age with you on this respect. You know, you've got this really terrific new book of yours talking about, you know, your teenagers. What's it like when you're a father of a teenager? Does it make you start to feel like, uh-oh, I'm getting old?
Definitely. But in my case, the real change has been that I have two kids. I have a son who's in his 30s now. You know, he's grown up, sort of, as grown up as males get. And you know, that was a while ago. I have a daughter who's 14. The big difference for me has not been so much the age thing. It's the gender thing. I mean, that is, it's a huge difference having a girl from having a boy, at least in my experience. Like, with my son, you know, I mean, this is probably irresponsible, but I didn't worry about him that much. Like, hey, stay in the United States and you're fine. You know, when you leave the house, you know, when are you going to be back? Back by Thanksgiving, fine, whatever. With my daughter, it's a radically different you get way more protective. And this is the part that I don't like. With when you have a daughter, boys come around.
Oh yeah.
they come around, and they try to get in your house. They're like, you know, like rodents.
Jesus.
So my idea, what I want to do is have a trap. It would be a humane trap, a steel trap, that I would put it by the front door, because that's often how they get in the house. And it would be baited with something that would attract teenage boys, something stupid like fireworks. And, you know, when I would hear the trap clang shut, I could go out there and there would be a boy in the trap. And I would take him out into the Everglades and release him in a humane manner. That's how I would like to handle the boys issue. But my wife, who is a woman and therefore doesn't know what boys are thinking, lets them into the house. So I'll routinely walk into the living room, and there will be my daughter sitting on the same sofa as a boy. That's the part I really don't like. I do got to say, I feel a lot older in one sense with my daughter, which is music. She plays soccer, so often I'm driving soccer carpool, which means I'm in a car with like 4 or 5 14 or 15-year-old girls, which is louder than a hurricane. I mean, there's but they play this music. As far as I can tell, they have 3 songs that they just play over and over again on the radio. And that's when I feel really old. And it's really hard to refrain from saying, "You kids today, you don't know what decent music is." But that's really what I'm thinking. They listen to horrible music.
Listen, I got a question though. But you know, you got this little girl, and I, from a father's eyes, you look. There's my little daughter. There's my little girl. And then one day you look, and she's not the little girl. What was that moment for like you?
Yeah,
tell me about that.
That's a terrifying thing. Yeah, there's like, you're right. I mean, at some point, like with the boys, they get like larger and smellier, and but they're still basically boys. And but with the girl, there's this like this hormone explosion goes on, and you can actually hear it. It's like boom goes off. And then all of a sudden, out of the bathroom walks a woman. That's terrifying. That's a terrifying thing. And then you still walk around, men look at women. They can't help themselves. But when you're a guy and it's your daughter they're looking at,
Take out the gun.
Exactly. I don't own a firearm, but there are times I wish I had one. You
know. So here's...
You can't look at... That's my daughter you're looking at like that.
Yes, I get
And
you.
I realize everybody's somebody's daughter, but I don't care about theirs.
No, of course not. Just yours. But that tells me something. I want to know who you were when you were like a 16-year-old kid. Were you like a naughty kid?
I was awful. I mean, that's exactly why I feel so protective of my daughter, because I can remember what I was like when I was a 16-year-old boy. 15-year-old boy, and they come around, this happened just the other night. It's 12:30 at night. And my daughter informs my wife that there's this, a couple boys they're outside. Like, what do you mean you're outside our house at 12:30? They just happen to be in the neighborhood. Like I say, they're like rodents, they're like termites. You have to be vigilant to keep them out.
Oh God! How is she looking at you these days? Now, we're hearing about what you're looking at her, but how is she looking at Dad these days? Are you like the enemy? Are you like some creature from like the Black Lagoon? What does she think about you?
Well, they think we don't know anything. I mean, we are convenient for getting them from point A to point B. Like they know they can't yet drive. That's, when they're 14, 15. So they need you to get them somewhere. And sometimes they need you to give them money. But other than that, they really, I don't think of us at all. My daughter is like most kids her age, completely involved in social media, Instagram and, texting, Snapchat, all these things. That we have, I don't know how to get on them. I don't know what they do on them. I don't know what's on there. But I know they're all on it together. Like my daughter, I'm pretty sure that if I were to say to her, "Can you get in touch with the teenage son or daughter of the Prime Minister of Belgium. You know, she goes, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, Snapchat friends with him. Because they're all somehow connected, you know, this giant synapse of you know, of adolescence.
They aren't amazing.
We're not part of that. We grown-ups are not part of that at all. And they don't, you know, my daughter, she doesn't dislike us. She likes us. She loves us. She thinks we're fine. But we're just not really on her radar, I don't think, is the main thing. We're just, you know, we don't know anything she's thinking about. We don't know anything about it.
And how does that make
scary.
You? Yeah, how does it makes you feel scared? How does that make
you
feel?
Well, you know, wasn't it like that when you were, I mean, that's the way it was when I was a teenager. We didn't have Snapchat, whatever that is, but we, you know, we still thought our parents were out of it, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We didn't think they cared about our music, and we didn't care about their music, and, you know, that's a normal thing.
So is she pissed off that you're sitting here talking about her to the world, or what?
I don't even think she knows, you know.
Oh, my God. That's pitiful. That is so funny.
In parallel universes. That's where we are.
Oh, my God. So listen, the title of this book, as I said in the opening, is You Can Date Boys When You're 40. I'm not going to ask you why you decided on the year 40, or should I?
Well, because I'm hoping to be dead by then. You know,
oh, Jesus.
But even then, I'll still be, I'll be dead, but I'll plan to be mummified so I can sit, you know, they can put my body in the TV room sofa in between my daughter and her date, you know. Don't mind me, kids. I'm just her deceased father sitting here. You go ahead and have your fun.
Give me a break. You just kill me, man. You just absolutely kill me. You know, I'm laughing at it because there's a piece in your book that you explain in the book that the book is just not about dating, and it's not. We're going to get into that in a second. And you say that you can't always judge a book by its cover, and it brought to mind what my first divorce attorney said to me after he got me out of that mess. The first one, he says to me, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. It's like, Dave gets that. But you're also talking about 50 Shades of Grey. And I want to, let's talk sex. Let's get off your daughter for a second. Let's talk sex.
Yeah, I am probably the only man, or one of the few in North America who actually read the book 50 Shades of Grey, because, I was curious. It sold hundreds of millions. I think it's the best-selling book of all time.
Yes,
this book, and everybody who bought it was a woman. I mean, men did not buy this book. You know, when that woman, the author, went to signings, it was just a sea of women, mostly middle-aged women, bought this book. Did you buy that book? Did you read that book?
Yes, all of them.
Beyond, all right,
cover to cover.
See, you're one of the few who admits it.
Oh, absolutely, and proud of it.
There you go. Well, okay, so you can back me up. So I want to say, okay, I know this book is extremely popular with women. So presumably if I read this book, I'll know what women think, what they want.
Oh, jeez.
So I didn't read all three. I just read the first one.
That was enough.
And here was the plot of, and you correct me if I get this wrong, okay?
Okay, I'm listening.
Okay, there's this woman. She's a young woman. She's a young woman college student. We're supposed to believe that, even though she's like doesn't seem to have a computer or know how email works. Okay, but we're supposed to believe that. And she's incredibly gorgeous, but she also apparently doesn't know that, even though everyone keeps telling her that, how gorgeous she is, all the way through. Am I right so far?
You're good. You're good. You're good.
Okay. So this very clueless, gorgeous, alleged college student in has this relationship with this 27-year-old guy who's a typical 27-year-old, except that he's unbelievably good-looking, and he's a billionaire, and he runs a giant company. Very realistic, right, so far?
You're right in there, buddy.
And we know that he's really good-looking because even though this woman keeps telling us how she's not shallow at all, she also tells us maybe every other sentence how gorgeous this guy is, right? So anyway, she wants to have a relationship with him because she's very attracted to him. Mm. But it turns out he's kinky. He wants to tie her up and hit her. now, not, you know, cutting right to the chase here. That's what he wants to do. And he has a whole room of, you know, places to tie people up and everything.
Oh, God.
You know, in a nice way, he wants to tie her up. But he wants her to sign a contract, a detailed contract, which is printed in the book in case anybody wants such a contract. Get 50 Shades of Grey, and then you have the contract, right? Saying all the things that he does want to do to her and things that, you know, he won't do to her. So anyway, there's 300 pages of this where She's really attracted to him, but he wants to tie her up and hit her, so she's not sure about that. But she's really attracted to him. He's really hot, but he wants to tie her up and hit her. She's not sure about that. They keep going. She keeps going back and forth and back and forth, 300 pages. So finally, at the end of the book, and spoiler alert, I'm going to give away the end of the book here, she lets him tie her up and hit her. And spoiler alert, it hurts.
Oh my God.
She doesn't like it. She doesn't like being tied up and hit. So that, and then so she breaks up with him, and that is the end of the book.
No, okay? I'm sitting here crying. I'm laughing to myself.
But that's the actual plot. Is that not the actual plot of the book?
That is actually the plot of the book, give or take. You left out a big part of it. You left out a big part of it.
Well, what part?
You left out the part and the part
all
that
the talking.
No.
Well, all the sex.
Not,
there's a lot of sex in there.
Well, there's a lot of sex. Yeah. But what you left out was the fact that he had been an abused boy.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, he had his reasons for wanting to tie her up and hit her, but it still hurt when he did it.
Yes, but you see, you're trying. I know where you, so we're going with, what did you perceive of women having read this book that
exactly.
sold more?
Well, anyway, no, at the end, so I asked my wife.
Does she read it too?
I said, do you secretly want me to tie you up and hit you?
No.
She didn't really. She did not read the book, my wife.
Oh, okay.
I said, do you secretly want me to tie you up and hit you? And she goes, no.
And I bet you ask every woman, she'd say no.
So I'm left with nothing. What I got out of this book is that what women want is a really hot billionaire who wants to tie them up and hit them. I mean, that seems to be attractive to this woman. So of the three, rich, hot billionaire. I don't have any of those things going for me. The only thing I could do is tie my wife up and hit her. She doesn't want that. So I got nothing out of this book, nothing.
God. So you have no understanding. You don't get women at all. And this just confuses the whole issue even more, I am sure, to most men.
So you're saying that it's okay, you find it attractive if the guy was abused.
No. But I would say that the saving grace in terms of her keeping all of these women reading it and talking about it and sniveling about it and carrying on about it was, and the only reason women probably said to themselves, okay, is because at the core of it was, oh, that poor guy. Look, that's
poor
just
guy,
terrible. Yeah. You know? I don't know.
Okay.
I've asked every woman who's read this book personally, and I know a lot, do they want to get hit? No. No. Do they find that frightening? Yes. Did they find that intriguing? Utterly. You go figure. I can't figure. I'm trying to figure it out in my own psyche.
And you're way ahead of me on.
And I read all three. And I read all three. Just bizarre. Can't wait for that movie to come out. I mean, I just can't even imagine what they're going to do with that. I have a question for you. Another one.
Yeah.
Here it is. You ready? What's with you and William Shatner? You want William Shatner to give your eulogy? What are you kidding?
Oh, yeah. I have a chapter, an essay in the book about death, and I describe my ideal, my funeral, how I'd like it to go. And one of the things I'd like, I'm not saying we have to have all these things, but I would like William Shatner to deliver my eulogy. And I really don't care what he says, just as long as he's involved.
Yes. And the reason, Shatner?
Because he's William Shatner. Like, how many funerals have you been to? I've been to a bunch of funerals, and I have to say, some of them better than others, but they all kind of blend together into one certain. But if I went to one with William Shatner, that'd be the one I'd say, like, wow, for the rest of my life, I'd go, hey, I was at a funeral, William Shatner delivered the eulogy. So
he does a good eulogy. I have to tell you that. He speaks. He's very active in the Jewish community center or the Jewish temple in L.A. And he's always he's a great eulogizer. I've heard him.
Are you kidding?
I'm not.
William Shatner?
William Shatner. Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Father of the synagogue.
Jewish?
Yes. Are you shocked?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, now you see, I'm always teaching you things, Dave.
They should have called Star Trek Jews in Space.
Well, let's talk about Jews. Let's talk about you went to Israel. And you,
I did. I am not Jewish, but my wife is.
Uh-huh.
She is what we call Cuban Jewish. Cuban. And there are many of them in Miami. My joke is they didn't come over on rafts. They parted the Caribbean.
Oh,
and
no.
Our daughter is being raised Jewish.
Uh-huh.
She actually had a bat mitzvah. And for her bat mitzvah present, I took her to, we took her to a Justin Bieber concert.
I love that. Yeah.
The greatest sacrifice any parent has ever made for a child. But anyway, so we went to Israel with the temple that we belong to, and we're there for 10 days. And it was very cool, except for a couple things I learned. One is you can ride on a camel over there. Have you ever done that?
I've never been on a camel. Yes.
What?
Yes, I've ridden a camel. Not there, but ridden a camel.
Oh, okay. Well, then my advice to anyone who ever has the opportunity to ride a camel is don't.
They spit, too.
It's like a terrifying experience. The Bedouin run these camel riding things in Israel, where you pull a busload of tourists pull up, and they have this train of camels tied together nose to tail, and each camel has a saddle that holds two people, and the camel kneels down. You know, this one by one, this train of camels, they kneel down, and you get on the camel. And the Bedouin guy, who didn't speak a ton of English, says, "When my wife and I were getting on our camel, he goes, do not scream when camel is getting up. Camel is getting up a little funny." So I'm thinking, like, well, how bad can it? It's terrifying. When the camel gets up, the camel turns out to be like 80 feet tall when you're standing up, and it's not the smoothest ride. You know, you're rocking around the desert. So even though we only walked around for maybe a quarter of a mile on the camel, we were both a nervous wrecks when we finally got off it. And so my feeling is that if this is how people have been getting around the Middle East,
explains a lot.
For centuries, no wonder they're all so tense over there. You know.
You actually have you rappelled off of a cliff? What?
I would never do it again. I don't even like heights. I hate heights.
Me too.
I'm terrified of heights. And I did it because my daughter, who was then 13, thought it would be just really cool. And I'm talking about, this was a cliff. And, you know, in the United States, whenever you have to do anything that seems even remotely dangerous, they put helmets on you. They have like 19 people giving you safety lectures. They show you safety videos. They make you sign, you know, documents, you know, liability documents and all that. And this wasn't like that at all. This is like one guy standing on the edge of a cliff, which had a ring bolted into it. And, you know, that's it. He says, okay, you put this on your waist and you'll walk off the cliff. And I would never have done that in a million years on my own. I only did it because my daughter wanted to do it, and I didn't want to look like a coward in front of her, even though I was a coward. So the rabbi goes off first. He was like, which I thought was very brave. And then a kid went. Then I went third, I think. And the rabbi was down at the bottom of this cliff, way down at the bottom, to help hold the rope for those of us coming down afterward. And I'm thinking, if I pee on this rabbi, it's like some terrible violation of some biblical thing. You know, thou shalt not pee on the rabbi.
Oh, my God.
So that's another thing. If you go to Israel, don't do that either. Don't do the camels and don't do the rappelling.
No, I'm telling you, you're
Israel's
insane.
Pretty cool. And don't go in the Dead Sea.
No.
No, there's those pictures of people bobbing around in the Dead Sea, reading the newspaper because they're floating so high. What they don't show is like 2 minutes later when those people are running around screaming because every single orifice in their body is like
stinging,
assaulted by this toxic stew, which, you know, the reason it's the Dead Sea is there's no animals in it, no animals, no plant life. Even plant life is smart enough not to go into the Dead Sea. The only form of life stupid enough to do this is tourists. Israelis don't go in. Nobody goes in. Just the tourists go into the Dead Sea so they can get their picture bobbing around with the newspaper.
You are a pistol.
Those are the three things. And above all, don't ever ride a camel into the Dead Sea. I don't know if that's ever been done.
No.
I would advise against that.
I wouldn't do that. Listen, one last question. I got to ask you this. After living through your parenting experience, let's get back to this terrific new book of yours, You Can Date Boys When You're 40. Tell me one thing. Okay, just one thing. If you have sympathy, guilt, what for your own parents? Talk to me, Dave.
Like pretty much every sentient human being, the older I get, the more aware I get of, first of all, how much my parents went through, because it was harder to be a parent when I, first of all, there are more of us. I was a family of four. But second of all, what an idiot I was when I was a kid. But it, you know, that's the, one of the truer things in life is that if there's any real meaning to the great circle of life, is that you will in the end, you'll suffer for everything you ever did to your parents if you have children yourself. That's their goal in life. They're wonderful, but they make you pay.
Kids make you pay. Do you learn anything from your kids, by the way?
I don't learn anything from them, but I rely on them, like, to say, hey, can you tell me how my phone works? I don't need to read manuals because I can just have them.
Dave Barry, you're the best.
Hey, it's been good talking with you.
It's always good talking to you. You be well. You stay well. You stay safe from all those boys.
I'll stay off the camels and out of the Dead Sea. I'll be fine.
And get your phone fixed, but that's just between you and I. Goodbye, honey.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Dave Barry, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and humorist, about his latest book, You Can Date Boys When You're 40, by way of G.P. Putnam's. For more information on Dave Barry, be sure to visit his website at daveberry.com. Before I go, I want to remind everyone that podcasts of current and past shows are always available to listen to free on iTunes under The Hallie Kesser-Jane Show. The Hallie Kesser-Jane Show is also available for download via Spreaker.com, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, and a host of other venues. Google The Hallie Kesser-Jane Show, and you will find us. Of course, podcasts of our shows, both past and present, are always posted for your listening pleasure at HallieKesserJane.com. Which I hope you'll visit often for the latest information on our upcoming segments. Oh, and while you're at HallieKesserJane.com, don't forget to visit my blog to read my latest musings. I'll be back next week, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Hallie Kesser-Jane Show, Talk Radio for Fine Minds, brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/The Hallie Kesser-Jane Show. Audible.com features over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Stay in touch, won't you? Remember, that's HallieKesserJane.com. Discover us on Facebook at HallieKesserJane and on Twitter at HallieCJ. I love to hear from you. So, till we meet again, this is Hallie Kesser-Jane. It's a wrap.